When it comes to hiring, don't search for a great talent, match with them. Thanks to Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find qualified candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility. Go to Indeed.com/listen and tell them you heard about them from this podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980 as well. Anthony Haney, super producer there. I'm Craig Hoffman. My name's on the show. What's up? What's happening? Happy, what day is it? Wednesday. It's competition Wednesday. Anthony, where's that wheel? We're going to need it. Actually, we don't need the wheel. We actually don't need the wheel today. Because the loser of today's competition Wednesday is wearing, we need that sweater is what we need. It's out there. Kind of want to like run out there and get it real quick, but oh, Anthony's going to get it. So today's competition Wednesday, which by the way is going to happen at 5 o'clock for a very good reason that I will tell you once Anthony is back in the room. But we are going to, Anthony's got the sweater. He's coming out of the bullpen. He's going back into his studio and, he's going to hold up for those of you watching on YouTube, the giant rooster sweater. Keep holding that thing up, Anthony, so I can try to describe it for the radio audience. So pretend like it's an ugly Christmas sweater, but you were wearing overalls over it. And coming out of the overalls is a giant rooster in a Santa hat. It's about as good as I can do of its description. In the break, Anthony, or actually if you even want to do this right now, can you take a picture of that and send it to me so I can post it up on Instagram? I'll put it on my Instagram story, at Hoffman.sports, if you want to see it. And Yeah. The loser's going to wear that for some amount of time later in the week. That is the current plan right now. So that is competition Wednesday. Now, that is happening at 5 o'clock because we don't move Not My Beat often. But when John Keim wants to come on the show and he can't do 5 o'clock because he's still reporting and he's in the locker room and he's doing his day job, getting all the information that we want to ask him about, we'll move Not My Beat back to 5:30. So Not My Beat today is the one, the only, John Keim. And he's coming up at 5:30. Also today, Erin Cox from the Washington Post. She is going to join us to talk about the latest on the RFK site. Of course, this morning on the Sports Junkies, Mayor Bowser was on talking about the breakthrough where the U.S. Senate is finally going to release the RFK land back to the District of Columbia, where D.C. and Maryland, and if they can get their act together, Virginia, but probably D.C. and Maryland, are going to compete over whether to keep the commanders at the Landover site, which is what Maryland wants, or to move them back to RFK, which is obviously what D.C. and what D.C. wants, and I think that is what is likely to happen. So, we'll talk to Erin Cox from the Washington Post about that coming up at 4:30. You'll hear from Mayor Bowser if you missed her on the Sports Junkies this morning at 4:45. We start though with it's Jaden Daniels' birthday today. That's it. That's the update from Ashburn. Thanks for listening, everybody. That's it, and that's all. No, the updates from Ashburn today. Not much new. We'll get more from Keim coming up and talk about some of the implications of these things. But Zach Ertz still in the concussion protocol. You have Jeremy Chinn still in the concussion protocol. And one of the things that I thought was interesting from the game on Sunday is that once Chinn went out, Percy Butler was not the next guy up. It was Derek Forrest, who has been inactive for a lot of games this year. And I think a lot of fans, because, you know, of familiarity's sake, wanted to see him, in the lineup. And I don't particularly think he played great, like down the stretch, obviously, in that those series where he was in, the Commanders gave up quite a bit of yardage and obviously gave up the touchdowns and all of that. And, you know, Defoe's involved in some of that. And part of that is he's rusty. He hasn't played as much. But also, I think, you know, he's a guy that can be a step late sometimes. And even on the play where Chinn gets concussed, like, Defoe's the one that delivers that hit. And I'm not saying, obviously, it's friendly fire. It's a terrible accident. He's not out there trying to hurt people. But he plays with physicality. But physicality misplaced can cause problems. And so I'm curious to see if there's any more information that comes out or anything we can deduce about why Derek Forrest was playing over Percy Butler. Because the other thing is, even earlier in the game, Forrest was in over with Chinn and Quan Martin. And this is actually something that I meant to text Keim earlier so that he could have asked today. I don't think this was asked in the press conference, but because Quan Martin is kind of the guy they use as a rangy safety, Anthony, he winds up staying in that role. For whatever reason, Butler comes out, and then Jeremy Chinn's like one-on-one with Marquez Valdes-Scantling at one play, and there's like a 25-yard gain. And, you know, Chinn does not play it well, but also, why is he playing man-to-man coverage on the number one receiver just because he lined up in the slot? Quan Martin is a former corner. Like, yeah, he's now playing safety, but he didn't forget how to cover. If I'm going to have one of the commander safeties playing man-to-man coverage, why isn't it Quan Martin? And so it is kind of an interesting thing to watch. And if Chinn is unavailable, do they flip some roles responsibilities? Is Butler back in the lineup as a guy who can play a little bit more center field over the top safety? And that is something that we can talk through with Keim. And it will certainly be something I talk through with Logan tomorrow as we preview the Eagles, because like A.J. Brown lines up in the slot, Devontae Smith lines up in the slot, and I don't want Jeremy Chinn or Derek Forrest covering those guys. And not that I'm in love with the idea of Quan Martin, but if I have to covering, you know, those two, I don't love anybody having to cover those two. That's not Marshawn Lattimore. But I mean, if I got to pick one, I probably pick the guy who played a decent nickel for some time last year, late in the year, a guy who was a cornerback in college. So that's on the to-do list for today. So we'll continue to talk about that. You'll hear a little bit more from Quinn and Daniels. We, by the way, are done early today. We only have 2 hours left at this point because we have Virginia Tech Hoops tonight here on the Team 980. So we are rocking. We are rolling. It is a quick one today, a sprint, if you will. And there's one non-Commanders, either on or off the field topic that I do want to talk about. If you've been listening to the show for months, you probably have a good guess. Believe it or not, I have thoughts on the Atlanta Falcons starting Michael Penix. Yeah. Whether the Commanders were playing them in 2 weeks or not, I have some things that I think should be said. So we're going to do that next. And then Aaron Cox is going to join us from the Washington Post to talk about the RFK site at 4:30. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. So yesterday, I believe it was actually basically 24 hours ago, during this very segment, we got a call from our guy Saeed, who was like, hey, by the way, this Falcons game that just got flexed into prime time, that could be Michael Penix's first start. And I was like, there is no way that is Michael Penix's first start, because there's no way the Falcons, unless the Falcons get eliminated this weekend, in which case maybe it'll be Michael Penix's first start, because there's just no way that, considering Raheem Morris made some comments that basically suggested that Michael Penix wasn't ready last week, and the Falcons are in the middle of a playoff race, that they're going to put a rookie quarterback in when they are on this tight of a tightrope over this high of a high wire. Hey, kid, we have no room for error in terms of the playoffs. No wiggle room. No margin. Need you to win. Must win game. Sunday night football. Go get them. That's organizational malpractice to put a kid in that situation. And sure enough, I was right. Sure enough, I was right. That will not be Michael Penix's first start against Washington, because they are giving him his first start in the same exact situation this weekend against the Giants. The Atlanta Falcons landing on Michael Penix in this way is just impossibly perfect. The Falcons have been an organization for a long time that is good but not great and can't get out of their own way. Always seems like they should just be a little bit better, but there's just something off that's not working. And this is how you get stuck in mediocrity. You make half-baked decisions. You don't go all in. You're hedging your bets at all times. And it doesn't allow you to pursue a strategy that allows you to maximize anything that you're doing. And if you want to make the argument, before I get too deep into this, if you want to make the argument that the Falcons season is at 7-7, basically over, that Tampa's playing well, they're not going to catch the Bucs for the AFC South, and they're too far behind Washington for the 7 seed, and so that their season is over, that I will give you. If you want to make that argument as a fan of the Falcons or of the NFL or just an observer, whatever, okay, fine. Hey, season's over. Penix is the future. He's ready enough. Who cares? Let's go. Fine. Problem is, that's not really their situation. Like, they're not out of this in terms of the playoffs. And especially considering this weekend, they have the New York Giants. If you're trying to just get Kirk back on track, and he has had some games this year that are good, then that, this would certainly be a weekend where you could try that. You don't have to do a whole lot on offense to beat the Giants. The Giants' defense is not really a pushover. But offensively, if you can score 14 points, you're probably going to win the game because the Giants' offense is fully inept. Meanwhile, the Buccaneers, down the stretch, they've got the Cowboys, the Panthers, and the Saints. They certainly could go 3-0. But the chances that they go 3-0... seem pretty slim, because they've already won 4 straight. Are the Bucs really going to win 7 in a row down the stretch? I mean, I know that Mike Evans is back and they're rolling, but that feels a little tough. And if you look at the standings, to not, again, win their division and host a playoff game, the Bucs are only 1 game up on the Falcons. I'm not telling you they're as good. Tampa's a plus 77 point differential on the year. The Falcons are minus 49. And if they're really this committed to the process and they're just being real with themselves, saying we're not that good, okay, they're probably never going to say that out loud. They probably should leak it to the press and be like, hey guys, just so you guys will stop beating up on us, we know that we're not going anywhere and that it's not worth the Cousins thing. And so we're just going to see what Penix has for the rest of the season, because we'd rather him get a little bit of experience to take into the offseason versus just starting afresh next year without having ever played an NFL snap. You want to do that? Fine. You want to try to do that quietly so you don't sell to your locker room that you're giving up on the season even though you're one game back with three to go? I guess. But that's not really how the NFL works. Like, you fight till the bitter end. You got to motivate these guys every single week to get up and go. And if you honestly think Michael Penix is the better option at this point, well, isn't that the answer, Craig? Isn't that the thing? Just play the better guy. Isn't it clear after Cousins struggled again on Monday night that Penix is better? Here's the problem with that. There is just no way you can convince me that he's all of a sudden better now when he wasn't last week. Now, if you want to go back before that, I will give the Falcons a little bit of a break. They had two really tough defenses, the Chargers, who, until the Bucs demolished them, were the best scoring defense in the league, and the Broncos, who might actually be the best defense in the league, were their two previous opponents. But why not start him last week against the Raiders? You had a long week going into Monday Night Football. The Raiders are terrible. Max Crosby's having surgery, so he's not even playing. Just play him then. And then you've got four games down the stretch where you just say, hey, Michael's grown enough that he's passed Kirk on the depth chart. Now, even though it's the Giants, it's a short week. You have three games for your playoff life. And by the way, if you were to lose this weekend, you're probably eliminated. So just do it next week. Two games versus three games, is it that much of a difference for the long term of Michael Penix? And this kind of goes back to the original sin of both signing Cousins and drafting Penix. The whole upside of Michael Penix is that he's already 24, 25 years old. You didn't have to wait an entire season like you might have, say, Drake May waited, you know, six, seven games. And then it was like, okay, he's seen enough NFL football in the meeting rooms. It's time to get him on the field. Jacoby Brissett's not exactly killing it. Let's go. Perhaps in hindsight, the Bears might have wished they did that with Caleb Williams. Whether it was bringing in a different veteran or just letting Tyson Bagent play, could the Bears have been better off letting a young Caleb Williams get more experience in the meeting room, in the classroom, and standing on the sideline and going like, okay, I see how this is done. Yeah, they thought they were good enough to go to the playoffs, and they thought Williams was ready. And you know, I don't disagree with that at the beginning of the year. Their offensive coordinator decision certainly left quite a bit to be desired and how they ran that offense, but this isn't a Bears segment. This is a Falcons segment. The Falcons, they drafted a guy in the top 10 who I don't know that anyone else in the entire league had a top 10 grade on after spending $100 million on Kirk Cousins, and they did it for a guy who should have been ready immediately because he's much, much older than your average rookie. And so the problem here is that they signed or they drafted a guy to say, hey, he's ready to play. We're going to maximize his rookie contract while also spending the kind of money on a veteran quarterback that doesn't allow you to spend money in other places. The whole benefit of having a rookie, which thank God the Commanders are about to experience for the next 4 years, is that he costs such a small percentage of what a quarterback is supposed to cost that it might as well be cheating. Quarterbacks now are $50, $60 million a year. Jaden's going to make like five for most of the next couple years. Let me actually look up the exact number. Because Cousins is going to make 27 next year. Actually, sorry. That's just his base. Oh my God, he's going to make like 39. They're going to have at least $35 million in dead cap next year if they want to move on from him. And that could be split in multiple years in terms of a June 1st cut. It'll be $65 million, $35 if they do it next year. And then prorate it so they can do like 30 and 30 over the next couple of years, or just they could take a Russell Wilson type hit like Denver did and just do it all next season. And maybe because Penix is on that rookie deal, you can get away with that and then in a couple of years, but then you're having to pay Bijan Robinson. Then you're having to pay Drake London. Like all of a sudden your cap goes nowhere. Meanwhile, Washington, should they really pay Terry McLaurin and T. Higgins, let's say? Probably not. That's probably not the wisest way to split your cap. That's the whole reason the Bengals are getting rid of T. Higgins in the first place. Well, except for the fact that you're not paying a quarterback. Because Jaden Daniels next year is going to make or count $8 million against the cap. $10 million in 2026. $12 million in 2027. We're talking about one-tenth of the premier guys at that position. At that $6, $7 million number. Next year, $8 million, so about 12% of a usual quarterback contract. That is enormous. And this is the problem with what how Atlanta's handled Penix the entire time. Are you in or are you out? And they've once again, just like they did when they drafted him, gone with the split the baby strategy. And they've put him in the worst possible situation. Whatever happens to Kirk happens to Kirk. At least he's getting paid. But if you want to help Penix succeed, you have failed him in every way imaginable. From a roster construction, expectations management, all that standpoint. Even the fact that they're doing this on a short week. He's got 6 days. And then the biggest game of your season on Sunday Night Football next week against Washington. It's just sad. But it's also perfectly how the Falcons have handled a million different things over the years, which is why they're constantly in the middle, constantly a team that you think should be better. And despite the fact that they've accumulated a lot of talent, seems to not be going anywhere. And it may work, but it's not going to work as good as it could if they had just done the process right in the first place. All right, when we get back here on the Hoffman Show, we are talking about a big breakthrough years in the making. Washington, D.C. finally has control of the RFK site. We're talking about it with an expert next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're brought to you by the Maryland Vehicle Theft Prevention Council. Maryland drivers, did you know a vehicle is stolen every 16 minutes in the state of Maryland? The key to preventing theft is in your hands. Lock your car, take your key, use an anti-theft device. Learn more about vehicle theft prevention at mdautotheft.org. Right now, it is our pleasure to welcome to the show a reporter from the Washington Post who has been covering the ongoing saga. Man, this has been ongoing for, I don't know, a decade plus, but it has finally come to an end, at least the first biggest hurdle of it. The RFK Stadium site and the land around it is finally going to be in the hands of the District of Columbia, which means the Commanders can continue their pursuit of moving the team back there. Erin Cox has been covering it for the Washington Post, and she joins us now. Erin, how are you doing this afternoon, and happy holidays to you.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I'm doing all right, though. I have to tell you, I have a little bit of anxiety about Congress and whether this saga actually will end and if we'll pass the bill as drafted and deliver all the things that you just talked about.
Okay, so Erin, let me kick back and you just put your feet up on the couch and I'm going to help you talk through your anxiety here for the entertainment of our audience. We'll keep it just to whatever anxiety is about this bill. We don't need to talk about whatever else is going on in your life. I hope there's not much on the anxiety front. So the current agreement, the way that I read yours and Sam's and the rest of your colleagues' story at the Post is that currently, after much negotiation with the senators from the state of Maryland, and Governor Wes Moore was involved in some of this, at least his wishes kind of get carried out by the senators, Chuck Schumer, the majority leader's office, that there's an exchange of these fighter jets and some assurances that the Landover site is going to be redeveloped if the Commanders do wind up moving out of Maryland, and it's in the spending bill. What is the anxiety that that might not actually wind up happening?
Right. So, I mean, like, this is a deal that sounds like it was, like, written for, like, a bad political drama, right? That they're going to trade fighter jets for a football stadium and also get a bridge funding. And they crammed all of this stuff into what's known as a continuing resolution. This is, you know, a technicality that goes through Congress that says we can't pass a whole new budget, but we're just going to keep going with the spending plan we have on the books for a certain period of time. And so this thing was negotiated for hours and hours and hours. Schumer was involved. House Speaker Johnson was involved. This thing took weeks, and it was complex and multi-layered. And they put out this bill yesterday evening that has RFK being given to the city. It has Maryland getting the fighter jets. It has money to rebuild the bridge in Baltimore. And it seemed like this, you know, grand bargain made everybody happy, and here it was, And then the House Republicans were like, yeah, no thanks. I'm not really sure we're in on that. Elon Musk started tweeting about it today, saying, I don't think we should pass this. Donald Trump has weighed in on Twitter, or excuse me, on Fox, and said, I'm not sure we're going to do it. So now there's a lot of uncertainty about whether this grand bargain that has been negotiated, you know, and it includes tons of other things, right, like farm aid and, you know, anybody in Congress who wants to get something before they leave town have tried to shove it into this bill. And so now it's unclear if they're actually going to pass it, or if they just decide to take strip all of that stuff out and just go with a straight bill. So I have anxiety that after days and days and days and days of watching this deal come together, figuring out behind the scenes all of these, you know, billionaires and governors and senators all figuring out what they could do to make each other happy, that it all kind of goes up in flames and nothing happens.
So just to be clear, this is House Republicans, the incoming president and his, we'll call them advisors. They might kill the entire bill, not something specific to the RFK site. The negotiation that it, like there are some farm provision that the Iowa caucus of people have been working on that also got stuffed into this bill. I'm just making that up, but it probably happened. And other things around the country that have been pork barreled into this that are also at risk here. Nothing specific to the RFK site.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, there has been, you know, Elon Musk retweeted some inaccurate information about the RFK site and said that it can't pass Congress. But I'm not really sure how, you know, but the Republicans were objecting to that before on some of them on financial grounds, right? That like, this is the, as one lawmaker put it to me, that like, there's not very, very many trains leaving the station at this point. Congress adjourns, you know, in by the end of the week. They have to keep the government moving. They're not moving a lot of bills. So anybody who wants anything out of this Congress had to get it into this bill. And now it seems like the House Republicans, at least maybe enough of them, maybe not enough of them, are wary of passing a bill with all this stuff shoved into it.
So Aaron Cox is our guest. She's a reporter, covers Capitol Hill, covers the state of Maryland, covers local politics here in D.C., all for The Washington Post. Like, I don't want to get too far down the politics rabbit hole because this is ultimately a sports show. At least that's what they tell me. And so I will just ask you, I'll ask it this way, Aaron. So much of our current politics is nothing remotely close to politics as usual for the last 20, 30 years of American politics, if not farther back. Government spending has been one that still is typically, if from my understanding, politics as usual. There have been a few government shutdowns. Maybe it's a little more contentious. There's a little more peacocking by various members of Congress about certain things because we live in, politically in an attention economy and they want their cable news hits or whatever. But typically these things do get done. Do you feel like that is the anxiety come from kind of that? And do you think there's like real risk that this isn't going to be your typical continuing resolution funding bill that even if there's a government shutdown for a couple of days, ultimately gets passed without too much damage? And certainly this RFK provision being stripped out of it.
Well, if the question is, what is my anxiety about? My anxiety is I really felt like I was done writing about RFK. And, you know, I happen to be married to a sports writer and live not that far from RFK. So this is an issue that we talk a lot about at my home, that my neighbors and I talk about, that it seemed like this saga was finally going to end, you know, and you're kind of like, it's like you get a cliffhanger, right? You thought you were going to get that satisfying ending, and instead you get a cliffhanger, and that's kind of where we are.
Got it. So Let's pretend that it all works out, that the silly politics of it all is the usual song and dance, and then eventually they all vote, and some things get changed, some things don't. But the RFK part of this stays in, and RFK goes under the control of the District of Columbia government.
We're in that parallel timeline.
Yeah, we're in that parallel timeline / future timeline where the conversations in your house and my house and all the houses around D.C. that want to see this happen or at least want a resolution, it ends in that way. What kind of fight are we in for within D.C. city government between city council, the mayor's office? And it seems like there's a little more harmony there than there has been in the past. But once they are done having to play nice together to get this thing out of Congress, I could certainly see that the politics of that change. So what are we looking for there within D.C. once the land is back under their control for it to ultimately wind up being, at least in part, a Commander Stadium site?
Right. So, I mean, that is like a 90-step process. And, you know, the thing is, like, the politics of sports stadiums makes all sorts of funny bedfellows. People get aligned when they wouldn't be aligned on other issues. I mean, and the thing that we're talking about is that, you know, this is 190 acres right on the waterfront. If you ever come into D.C. off of 295 and you have to go around the big rusting thing to get to the Capitol, we're talking about all of those athletic fields, all of that kind of, like, parkland, all of those parking lots. It's a huge amount of property, and it's right next to a metro station. So this is basically like one of the hugest undeveloped tracts of waterfront property in D.C. So if you can imagine who would have interest in having a say in what happens there, and then add in money and add in power, you just end up with this huge dynamic of complicated mess. And so D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser really wants a stadium there. She wants mixed use. She wants housing. She wants an entertainment destination. She wants, you know, to transform that whole area. The people who live there are not universally thrilled about having a football stadium there. So you have to get all of them on board. City Council has been pretty divided on it. The mayor would have to negotiate with the team on a deal that works for the team. You know, the economics have to work. People talk about how much money there is in football, and there certainly is a lot, but that doesn't mean that there's a couple billion dollars laying around to build a stadium. You know, you just bought a team. You also have to finance a couple billion dollars to build a stadium. So you have to work out all of the economics of what does the city offer the team. They just offered, you know, what was it, $500
million? Yeah, $535 million to Leontis.
Yes, exactly, to keep him in the city, right? Yep. Like, this isn't a time when governments are flush with cash. This is a time when governments are looking very hard at budgets, making really hard choices. So, like, on a lot of levels, in the parallel timeline where this bill clears Congress and the city gets control of the land and they get to determine the future there, in a lot of ways, that's sort of a whole new chapter in this saga of what is the city going to offer? How are they going to get them on board? How are all of the councilmen going to agree? How are all the people who live in the neighborhood agree? So it's, you know, kind of the beginning of the next chapter.
I know the Washington Post has tremendous abilities to conduct polls, but since you said you lived in the neighborhood, have you at least done like a straw poll of your neighbors and how you guys feel on that side of town about it?
You know, it's honestly like pretty split. I mean, there's also a high level of kind of better than, whatever, as long as it's not what it is, I'm better than nothing. There's a lot of people who are really not into it because they think it would create a parking mess. You know, I live not even, I wouldn't call, like, maybe a 20-minute walk. And when I first moved in like 10 years ago, there were signs on the park. There were still signs up that said no parking on game days. Right. Like the parking signs still say that. So I think there's like trepidation. People, you know, and people are concerned about change. And there's also like, you know, divided opinion on whether, you know, a private entity deserves tax-free land. Right. Like, do they deserve public investment? So I don't know. This is me dancing around your question because I don't want to sell out any of my neighbors. But I would say that I do not think that the neighborhood would be the loudest cheering squad for the stadium.
Fair enough. Aaron Cox with us from the Washington Post. And that's totally fair. And like, I don't live on that side of town, but like, as a district resident, like, the idea of giving Josh Harris and his ownership group, which has a net worth, I think in total, somewhere north of $50 billion, my tax money, I'm like, I don't think you guys need it. I feel like there's some other stuff, but also if it generates revenue, like, and then you get all the experts that study this stuff, all the economists screaming that actually that revenue is, it wouldn't make any, they're not making more money on a sports stadium than you do if you did something else. So it is very complicated and complex, and opinions are varied. Yet the state of Maryland, they're pretty straightforward. They are like, whether it's Westmore or the local folks in PG County, like, they would like to see Landover 2.0. What is their rationale for that? And also, I guess the bigger question is, what kind of realistic case do they have to convince that after all of this, all of the lobbying, all of the waiting, all the everything, the spiritual home being in D.C., as it's been said by many people, including Josh Harris, that Maryland on the merits is actually for time, for money, for whatever, a better site and the chances that you give that actually happening.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess to answer your first question of like, what do they want there? I mean, I think what they really want is not to have the next RFK in Landover, right? They don't want a big old resting stadium that nobody uses and parking lots that just sit there. And the team owns, you know, Dan Snyder bought up a lot of land out there. The team already owns 200 acres around the stadium. So they own a huge amount of property that's not far from, you know, that's near the Beltway. It's not in, you know, it's near a metro stop. Anybody who's had to, like, make that walk from the metro stop knows it's not next to a metro stop, right? So, I mean, the big thing that they want is to, like, not get screwed over is what they want. They still, I mean, they make an argument that they think that they can offer the team a better deal. I've talked to Westmore personally about this a couple times, and he is very bullish on it. He's, you know, bullish every single time you talk to him about it. He really thinks that Maryland can put together some sort of package that makes Landover attractive, whether that's tax incentives, whether it's tax breaks on development, whether it's creating some sort of easy, you know, anytime you build stuff, you have to get permits and regulations, and it's very complicated making all of just making it easier to build there. The state's already invested $400 million into redeveloping the area around the stadium. They're trying to get that whole corridor after you hit the city line coming out of the city into Maryland, that whole corridor along the blue line to be an entertainment district. So they have this big grand plan and they want the team to fit into it. And so they you know, they consistently throughout this until very recently seemed to think that they were going to have a really competitive shot. But you know, waterfront land in the city where you could build a stadium that has a view of the Capitol in the background. I mean, I think realistically, they know it's hard to compete with that.
For sure. The last part of this, Aaron, is the practice facility side. I don't know how much you've gotten into this with the folks that you talk to, but they're going to need to upgrade or move and create a new practice facility at some point in the next decade, if not half decade, as well. And it's something Josh Harris has said, like, yeah, we gotta do this. Currently, obviously, they're headquartered in Virginia on that side. Virginia doesn't seem to be at all in the market here on the stadium side of things. I'm sure they would love to keep the practice facility, but could that be a use of that 200 acres? Or where do we stand on that? And is Virginia at all a player in either retaining the practice facility or getting involved late here on the stadium pitch?
I mean, I wouldn't underestimate the political will of anybody in this region to figure out how to make a deal, right? I wouldn't write off Virginia, but I definitely think I cover Maryland, so I know a lot more about Maryland. And, you know, they know about that practice facility. They know that if you build a practice facility over there, all of those players with all of their incomes might move closer to the practice facility, right? And then you get to tax all of their income. That's not a bad deal. You don't have to deal with all the traffic from the stadium. You know, you don't have to deal with the political pushback from giving public dollars to build a football stadium. So in a lot of ways, a training facility would be an exceptional consolation prize for Maryland. And they're no dummies. They know that. They would definitely take a training facility if they can't get a stadium. You know, and the team has a lot of assets to shop around, right? Like, the team is the one in the driver's seat at this point. You know, like, they have to get deals out of all of these jurisdictions. But on some level, it's kind of crazy that, you know, a private institution owned by billionaires can pit three different governments against each other to fight for who can give them the best deal for all of the things that they want to build.
And of course, the funniest part of that is Dan Snyder had that going for a decade, and he was so bad at business that he couldn't get anything.
Yeah, I feel like it's probably not safe for me to say anything about Dan Snyder.
Fair enough. We'll just keep it moving. Erin Cox, you can read her work on this in the Washington Post. She's been teaming up with a whole number of colleagues, including our guy Sam Fortier, on this. Erin, an absolute pleasure to have you. Thanks so much for your insight, and we will certainly have you back as this continues to unfold over the next week or two here at the end of the year with the CR and all the things that are giving us anxiety.
Yes, yes, it was great to be here. And, you know, if this radio thing doesn't work out, you can look into being a therapist. You did great. I feel much better.
Excellent. Yeah, I had to give one of my colleagues, we call it football therapy yesterday. So we're just, you know, one therapy session a day on the show. It apparently keeps us going. Thanks, Aaron.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, that's Aaron Cox with us here on The Hoffman Show. Real quick before we take a break and come back for Competition Wednesday, here is Mayor Bowser this morning on the Sports Junkies on what she sees as the next step and the time frame for all of this going down.
All right, so if it's voted on later this week and it passes, then what exactly is the next step?
The next steps are we will proceed with demolishing the current site. We will proceed with developing our vision, having discussions with the team, community, and our stakeholders. And we will aim to have an agreement with the team.
So this is a big deal, Mayor
Bowser.
It's a very big deal. Yeah.
What is the time frame where you feel like you could get a commitment from the team?
From Josh Harris.
Well, I always think we should do things yesterday. I think they have a very significant time crunch. They have a lease in. Josh Harris has stated publicly he'd like to be in the stadium by 2030. And in order for all of those things to happen, I think that we have to have an agreement this year.
They've got to go fast because construction takes a long time in D.C. You have all these permits. You have unions, which like unions are great, but they involve certain and a little bit of extra paperwork and making sure that certain things are followed. That in states where there are construction with less rules, let's say, that perhaps you can move a little bit faster. And so it is a huge time crunch, and they're already going to have to extend the lease in Landover. They're already going to have to be in that stadium 2 years longer than they would have if they could have gotten this done any number of years ago. And that's the thing, is like they have been working on this for a long time, but the people in charge were both incompetent and corrupt enough that folks at the Capitol did not want to play ball with them. They did not want to release the land to Dan Snyder. They just didn't. I don't think that it's coincidence that we are closer than we've ever been because Josh Harris is involved. Also, for all of the silly talk about, Bruce Allen's really connected. Bruce Allen's a political animal. He knows these people. Bruce couldn't get anything done. Josh Harris is on the team for a year, and he and Mitch Rales and Magic Johnson and like this group, they've gotten it farther than anybody else has before. And maybe it still fails, but it's not going to fail because of them. It's going to fail because Congress is broken and this is the way politics are done. And then all of a sudden you think you have a deal because all the people that you were doing the politicking with, you got the handshake here and the kiss the baby there. And then, oh, wait, we forgot about that guy who just came in. And especially, like, again, whether you agree with him or not, the way that Donald Trump operates coming in, even though he's not even president yet, he's kind of blown away the one president at a time thing. Because he's got the Republican caucus wrapped around his finger. And again, I'm not going to comment whether I agree or not with that, or whether I agree with what they're doing in this particular case or not. But all of a sudden, he has a tendency to change his mind on a whim or get involved in something that he becomes a pet project for him. Or Elon Musk, all of a sudden, the richest man in the world, is like, hey, I got an opinion, and now he's in, and now the Republican caucus in the House is like, yeah, we know we agreed on this and we gave it to you a bunch of months ago, but surprise. And now here we are. And so this is the way that things unfortunately tend to get done. If you want a better way, then vote in different people. And it's important to remember that in this process, we, the collective citizenry, have power here. We can run for things. We can vote for things. We can pressure the people that represent us. And we just got to hope that the system works the best we can. And if not, then we elect someone else. And, there's a lot of money involved in politics now. And I could go on about all this stuff, but this is the way it's done. And unfortunately, because of D.C.'s lack of statehood, because of our lack of control in the district over our own affairs, we're at the mercy of all of that. And that is just the sad, sad reality of the situation. But hopefully that reality changes as soon as this weekend. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And when we get back, it is time for something fun. Competition Wednesday. He's ready, everybody.
He's ready for a competition Wednesday. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. If you're going, wait, not my beat is supposed to be here. You're correct, but we are moving things around because the one and only John Keim is going to join us coming up at 5:30 today. 5:30, Keim, tell your friends. Also, Anthony, you know how we can send out those alerts on the Odyssey app? Can we do an alert at 5:30 for Keim? Keim's worth an alert.
Yeah, I got you.
All right, excellent. In the meantime, sir, are you ready to learn if, for the first time in a month, you have beaten me in a competition Wednesday?
Does this sound like you know something?
I plead the fifth.
You're smiling mighty hard over there, Craig.
But I could be happy for you.
Nah, because it could be one of those situations where I think I got you all wrapped up, and next thing you know, I lose, just like 2 weeks ago.
Let's find out.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's find out. Let us find out. If you're new to the show, or you typically don't get to hear Competition Wednesday, you maybe hear about it, but you're in your car and done by 5:30, so you're hearing it for the first time today here at 5 o'clock, here's how this works. Every week, Anthony and I pick three games against the spread each. Not the same three games. Then we pick one game that is a tiebreaker that is the same game should we need it. Things have gone quite well for me. I am 22-5 in the season in games that I have selected. Anthony did pull above 500 last week. He is, I believe, 14-13 on the season. So, last week, I was 3-0 for the third straight week. Really frustrating for Anthony. I know that I dropped a game this week, which is where we start, because Anthony, the first game that I picked, I believe, last week, was the Washington Commanders.
Ah.
And had Jaden Daniels hit Terry McLaurin on any of those bombs, or had Greg Joseph even made that field goal to put them up 10 late, maybe the Saints just eat it. Maybe they don't score. Situation plays out a little differently. And the Washington Commanders cover a 7.5-point spread. They certainly played at a level that they should have, but they didn't. Oh, man, I got to say, too, by the way, if it was 6.5 or 7, and that touchdown that shouldn't have counted at the end of the game had been the difference in covering or not, I would have been livid. Livid. I probably would have been like, it doesn't count. Like, that's the kind of thing that in Vegas they take off the board. They're just like, nope, everybody gets their money back. But it was 7.5, so that touchdown didn't matter. And thus, I am 0-1. I have missed a game for the first time in a month, Anthony.
Let's clap it up for you, Craig.
Yay!
You're human.
All right, your first game, Anthony. You decided to bet on the Dallas Cowboys.
Woo-hoo, let's go.
The Cowboys were 3-point dogs to the Carolina Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, give me Carolina. But, you know, I was like, let's not touch that game for me, but I would have been on Carolina had we. You were right, man. Cowboys dog walked the Panthers. Panthers look like the Panthers of old. Cowboys look like the Cowboys of competence. All of a sudden, big old win. They won outright. Anthony, I'm 0-1. You're 1-0.
How about them Cowboys? Yeah!
I didn't even know you had that.
I got a couple of drops over here.
Oh, you want to use them every once in a while?
Oh, I mean, I have to know what's going to be happening for me to, like, pull them out. But I know for a fact the Cowboys at once. I was like, oh, let me go get my... How about them Cowboys?
The words that are coming out of my mouth?
I just got to remind folks I got stuff, too.
See, yeah. Yours are closer. Mines are in this system over here.
Oh.
He almost pooted on himself.
It's a classic. Classic. You've been with the show a while. Okay, next up, the Cincinnati Bengals were 5-point favorites over the Tennessee Titans. And thanks to the stylings of one William Mayonnaise Levis, the Cincinnati Bengals covered that and then some. The Bengals, they won by a lot. Titans, that was a weird-ass football game. But Titans did not cover. Anthony, I am 1-1.
Probably.
Next up for you, Anthony,
a team that I would never take. A team that I absolutely despise. In fact, the team that I despise, you had the New York Jets plus 3.5 over the Jacksonville Jaguars. And thanks to Davante Adams having 198 yards. Did he do that all in the second half, by the way? I was listening to the Athletic Football Show earlier, and they thought that he did. Did he have?
I think he did. I'm not going to lie.
I think he went 9 for 198 in the second half alone, which is on pace for a 400-yard receiving day. They did indeed cover that. A couple too many Mac Jones whoopsies. And Anthony, going into the final games here, you're 2-0. I'm 1-1.
Oh, it was Jets plus 3.5?
Jets plus 3.5.
I really took a lot of the dogs last week, huh?
You did take some dogs last week. Yeah. And it mostly worked for you.
Yeah.
I took all favorites, which I hate doing, and luckily two of the three worked for me. Because the Philadelphia Eagles curb stomped the Pittsburgh Steelers. I got a little lucky here that George Pickens didn't play, but hey, that's them's the breaks. We pick the games. We see what happens. But I really leaned into that. I thought Pittsburgh would play a lot of man coverage. I thought that was a bad idea against Philly. That's exactly what happened. Jalen Hurts had his best game in weeks. Philadelphia wins. I finish the week at 2-1. And that's when it all went horribly wrong now, didn't it? For our lad Anthony Haney, pending the tiebreaker. Because, Anthony, do you know who the third team that you bet on was?
I know I got one of the games wrong, and I think I said it yesterday.
It was your boys.
Oh, the Colts minus 4. Plus 4.
You got let down by those closest to you. Anthony, you bet on the Colts to cover 4 against the Broncos, and it looked so good. It looked so good because Jonathan Taylor was running, and he had no one in front of him. He just had to get across the goal line. And who knows how that game turns out if that swing doesn't happen. Because the Colts later get pick 6'd on a double pass. You're not throwing a double pass if you're up 2 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Game totally swings. Swings so far that the Denver Broncos cover the 4. And you finish 2-1. Which means we go to the tiebreaker. Anthony, do you know what the tiebreaker was?
Don't tell me it was Bills Lions.
Anthony, the tiebreaker was Bills Lions. And I picked the Bills plus 2. Not only did the Bills cover the 2, Anthony just got up out of his chair and is slowly walking across the studio. His head is in his hands. He's upset. He is upset, and I would be too. He has grabbed the rooster sweater that is going to be his punishment. Anthony, the Bills were 2-point dogs. They won outright. I win again. Ho-hum. Another competition Wednesday goes in Craig Hoffman's favor. And Anthony has put on the Chris Russell's rooster Christmas sweater, which features a rooster in overalls. It's about 13 sizes too big for Anthony. He's actually wearing it as a smock. His arms were underneath the sweater. Anthony, on Friday during our NFL picks, you have to wear that for the entire time.
I will be dressing up so I can remotely fit this.
Are you going to put on a Michelin Man suit underneath?
That remains to be seen, Craig, but just know I will come
the rooster. The rooster's slimming down. That's a little big on him at this point. That's a sweater that was sized for a formerly larger version of the rooster. You're not a big fella. Got a big heart. Lion-hearted. Big soul. Not the world's biggest body for a sweater that size.
It's okay, Craig.
You know what also isn't very big anymore?
What?
Your ego.
Literally since that week, Craig, I promise you, I have not done well when it's coming to picking games.
Well, guess what's going to happen? What? You're going to try again. You're just going to keep on going. So coming up next, Anthony and I pick week 16's edition of Competition Wednesday. Then John Keim joins us at 5:30. here on The Hoffman Show. John Keim coming up in 15 minutes here on The Hoffman Show. It is Competition Wednesday, though. Flipping Not My Beat in Competition Wednesday today. And we will talk to Keim coming up at 5:30 about the latest in Ashburn, from John Allen's return to practice to the guys that are not practicing and what the Commanders can do to replace them if they are unavailable Sunday against the Eagles. Right now, though, we pick our games. I did win again last week. That's five straight, Anthony. It's at least four, because I didn't lose a game for 3 weeks. I did lose one this week, but I won the tiebreaker.
Yeah, probably at four.
So four or five. You know, yeah, we'll count it up. We'll count it up next week. But lucky me.
Yeah.
Anthony, how many times have you beat me in the 3 years of this show at picking anything?
That's a great question, Craig. Hey, look, I don't remember at all.
Hard to forget what doesn't exist.
I don't
hard to remember
anything,
what
sir.
Doesn't exist. Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, take this with your luck. All right, I go first because that's what happens. If Anthony wins, he can go first. I am going to go for my first game this week to the Minnesota at Seattle game. This line suggests that Geno Smith is going to play. Whether he plays or not, I would be taking Minnesota here. It's only -3. And if Sam Howell winds up playing and Geno is out Sunday, then this line is going to skyrocket as the week goes. And I'm getting it at -3 when it opened Monday at -4. Anthony, my first game is Vikings at Seahawks, Minnesota, -3. Give me the favorite.
Man, you're sticking with the favorites, huh?
I hate taking favorites, but you got to do what you got to do sometimes.
Yeah. For my first game, these games are nasty, man. They are nasty.
I got about four or five that I like.
Really?
Yeah. Normally, I can't find anything. But unfortunately, I like a lot of favorites this week.
Uh-huh.
So, we'll see what we got.
All right. I think for my first game, even though I'm scared to do it, I think I'm going to take... Actually, no. I'm going to take the Lions over the Bears at -6.5.
That was one that I had written down for me. That was definitely going to be my next pick because the Bears are terrible.
Yeah,
and there is no, even though the Lions defense is super banged up, I know the Lions offense is not going to be as good in the long term without David Montgomery. There has been no unit that is more consistent in the NFL this year than the Lions offense, and the Bears defense is not propositioned to stop it. That is probably going to be a blowout. So I am upset that you took that one. The other game that I had three written down, and then I'm going to have to go to one of my backups. I'm going to get two of them though here. I'm going to Sunday Night Football. Tampa at Dallas. Tampa is 4-point favorites. The Cowboys always get a little bit of extra love because Cowboys fans love betting on the Cowboys. So their lines are always a little bit off. Two, Dallas played well last week. I don't think that they're good. I think they played a Carolina team that is not very good. I think Tampa's offense is rolling. I'm going to say Tampa -4. Not a problem. They're going to win this game by 2 touchdowns. Tampa, -4. Book it for me.
Okay. I saw that game. I don't like the number, though. I feel like Trayvon Diggs, Deron Bland, like, they haven't shown up. We haven't seen it yet. Like, and I'm not saying they're not capable of, you know, going out there getting pick six or anything, but they might be due. So this game could be interesting.
It could be if they can go pick off Baker a couple times. And, you know, Lord knows Baker's one of the loves of a 4-touchdown, 2-interception game, or a 2-touchdown, 4-interception game. I'm going to bet on the 4-2 on the good side. And it's 32 touchdowns and 14 picks on the season. I'm going to, since Mike Evans has been back, like, that Tampa offense has been pretty good.
Yeah, they've been nasty.
Liam Cohen might get some head coaching interviews. He's been that good as an OC this year.
Yeah. For my second game, I'm going to take the Bengals -7.5 over the Browns. Dorian Thompson will be starting at quarterback for the Browns. I just don't think they can keep up with the Bengals' offensive firepower. Like, Burrow has put up points no matter, like, what defense he's faced.
Yeah.
And I just don't have that faith in the Browns to keep up.
This was 100% on my list. This was 100% on my list. I do think that that is a really potent Cincinnati offense that is now facing a Cleveland offense that I don't know is nearly as potent. Like, when Jameis is in there, anything could happen, good or bad, but you're going to get some points. With DTR in there, are they getting anything? Like, this could be 30 to 10.
Yeah, get ugly.
Which, now you just need 7.5. I'm really torn on what I want to do for the last game.
Uh-oh.
Because some of the games that I like, I'd have to break some rules. Because there's a ton of division games. And for division games, you kind of just want to take the underdog. And just be like, take the dog, take the points. Don't worry about it. I've already taken a bunch of favorites. There's some huge lines that I'm just like, I don't know. Are the Bills going to beat the Patriots by 14? Probably, but I don't want to bet on that big of a number in a division game. There's some terrible football games, like the Raiders-Jags game. I could take the Jags plus 1.5. Do I want to? Actually, you know what? Yeah, I do. Because the other game I was thinking about was the Baltimore-Pittsburgh game. Because if there's no George Pickens, that could be pretty hard for Pittsburgh. But that rivalry is what it is. I got to take a dog. I haven't taken a dog in 2 weeks. And I think the Jacksonville Jaguars, while not a better team than almost anybody, are a better team than the Las Vegas Raiders. Give me Jacksonville plus 1.5 on the road.
Okay, you can have that, Craig.
I don't want to know what happens till it's over. I don't want to watch any of that game. But, I mean, you saw what the Raiders were on Monday night. They had to do just anything to be competent, and they could have beaten the Falcons. Kirk Cousins won that game and got benched. The Jags were right there with the Jets. Not that the Jets are any good, but they at least scored points. Brian, oh God, what's his name? The receiver from LSU.
Brian Thomas Jr.
He's nasty. Give me Jacksonville, plus 1.5.
All right. I thought you were going to go Rams over the Jets, but
I thought about it.
Huh?
I thought about it.
Ah.
But that line's a little weird to me.
Yeah. Scary.
A little scary. Little bit, let's avoid it.
I think I want to, for my last game, go with
You want to go Colts with your boys. I was going to say.
Over the Titans, man. I think the Colts, man, they're upset that they let last week's game get away from them. It is a divisional game, so that does concern me a little bit. But I think they got something to prove out there. And the Titans stink.
The Titans that's the hook.
Yeah.
Is, one, it's only 3.5. Two, the Titans are terrible. Now, that said, they are going to start Mason Rudolph, which pushes a much higher floor underneath them than Will Levis does. And my question is, did the Colts just let go of the rope after last week, or are they still locked in for the final couple games of the season? If the Colts, you told me the Colts are going to be locked in, I would take the Colts, and I'd feel pretty good about that. If not, then who knows? We'll see. We need a tiebreaker, Anthony.
Let's go Rams-Jets.
You're giving me the Rams minus the 3.5?
Oh, not mine. Hold on. I'm not taking the Jets.
You know I don't take the Jets.
Yeah, you're right.
You have strong thoughts in Arizona-Carolina? Arizona's a 5-point favorite.
I mean, that one's nasty.
I would take Carolina in that.
What about Ravens-Steelers?
I would be on Baltimore's side.
Broncos-Chargers.
I would be on Denver's side.
Dang. We're agreeing a lot. All right, I guess we got to go with the Panthers' cards. This was a little concerning. Dang. You're taking the Panthers plus the 5?
Yeah.
All right. I'll take the Cardinals minus the 5 and pray. Trey McBride gets into the end zone. Marvin Harrison has a resurgence. And Kyler Murray can get them back in the win column.
Depends on which Carolina team shows up.
Man.
We'll see on that. But the wait is over on one thing, Anthony.
John Keim.
John Keim is ready to join us. Cakes, next. It's the Hoffman Show on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. And it is our pleasure now to be joined by my good friend John Keim, Commanders reporter for ESPN.com and, of course, host of the John Keim Report podcast. You can get anywhere you get your pods and on YouTube as well. Cakes, how we doing?
What up, Craig? How are you?
I'm great. It's always great to have you. And let's start off today. There's so much to get to, so many different things news-wise, some analysis stuff we can get into in terms of where the Commanders are and where they're headed. But you broke the news late last week that John Allen might actually return this season, that as you reported, the pectoral tear was only a partial tear. And lo and behold, they open up his 21-day window today, and he is back out there at practice. Do you, or I guess the first question would be, when do you expect to see him? And then the follow up to that would be, once he's out there, what kind of role would he play?
So the scenario that was always kind of presented to me would be practice this week and next week, and then return for the Atlanta game, giving him two games to get ready. And for what they hope, of course, is the playoffs. Now, I think that's more as much his preference. I think, you know, I'm sure the team would like, first of all, they got to make sure that he's ready in their minds. But I think the ideal scenario for him is what I laid out. And so that's kind of what I'm expecting, but that's not a guarantee. Maybe it could go to the last game, but I definitely expect him to play this year. So that's why they opened the window.
So with him, I think it's interesting because
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, but you asked what role. That's a good question that I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
What I do know is that, you know, Johnny Newton certainly has some really good moments. And other moments, it's like he's still learning. He's a rookie. And there's situations where you're learning how to play double teams consistently, et cetera, that John Allen knows how to do. And I would anticipate when he gets back to where they need him to, that he would get back in as a starter. And then it just puts Newton in a position where maybe you can create some situations for him, like where they can use those three defensive line sets, right? Or three defensive tackle sets. Or you can get him maybe in some more pass rush situations and let him just kind of get to the quarterback, that kind of stuff. So anyways, and I don't know that for sure, Craig, but that's what I would think would be the case.
Right. And well, that's what I was going to also say is they really struggled when he was in the lineup earlier this season. He, like Duron, like Johnny, is an undersized guy, really explosive, can get in the backfield, good penetrator. I think John's a little less twitchy, but also understands leverages and things a little bit more than those other two. But the fit, it was certainly something that was causing problems. Now, it's been overall better. That doesn't mean that he wouldn't have also gotten better as the season when he learned the technique.
He was not the problem.
Right. So there's a counterfactual here. I'm not trying to imply that, like, take out John Allen, it's better.
Right.
But the idea that, like, sometimes pairing Duron with a Sheldon Day or a Carl Davis, that has been something that I think has been beneficial. So as they figure out Fedarian Mathis and whether I feel like he might not even last the season if they have to bring John back and there's a roster move, and this combination of D linemen that they have, you know, when you've had conversations with folks around the building about Allen, about what he was earlier this season, and about this theoretical comeback, has that entered the equation at all?
Yeah, I don't know that we've gotten that deep. I do, like, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with him, though, right? Because, obviously, you know, he's going to be entering a key offseason. So I think for him it's a good thing to come out and show what you can still do coming off an injury. You know, he doesn't have the guaranteed money. You could save $17 million by cutting him. Or if he goes out there and he looks good, you can always extend him and lower the cap hits too, right? Because this is a place that he wants to be, and this is a place, you know, they're finally winning and doing all that. And you know, the other thing is too, and it's, I know that with he and Duron, I think they had a couple really good years, and so you got used to that. And there is an adjustment anytime there's a new system, and what they're asking him to do. And I know, like, the run defense, it was not all because of tackles, far from it. it was a combination of many things. You know, sometimes it's guys trying to go behind blocks, underneath blocks, and creating wider gaps. Sometimes it's, you know, a little bit of hesitation, knowing which gap or you know, the gap is wide for a safety to come up and fill, et cetera. So there are a lot of things that went into it. And, you know, so it wasn't just as simple as, oh, this guy or that guy or these two. But, you know, I think the other thing, Craig, that what it gives you is just the depth. I mean, you're adding another quality defensive tackle late in the year, right after adding a really good starting corner, in Marshawn Lattimore. So it strengthens your defense. It gives you more depth at a position. And, you know, you don't have to play, you know, like you have Carl Davis who's out there playing instead of Fedarian Mathis. Maybe you don't have to play him because you've got John Allen coming in, right? So I think it strengthens you, period.
And getting stronger in December, good. Unfortunately, there are also some guys going out the other end of the revolving door. John Keim, Commanders reporter, ESPN, with us here on the Hoffman Show. Did we learn anything new today as you guys talked to Quinn and the team was back at practice about Zach Ertz? And actually, let's just start with Ertz. And then, you know, did we learn anything new about Ertz? And then with a full week to prepare, how do you think they go about replacing all the things that he does?
So with Ertz, no, we don't hear anything because he's in that concussion protocol. You know, it's hard unless you see them out there, and we did not see him out there, did not see him in the locker room. Saw Jeremy Chinn, who also had a concussion, who's in that protocol, but he was on the field. He was, you know, he went through warm-ups, and then he went to a side field, saw him in the locker room. So, you know, if you're going to be optimistic about one of the two right now, it would be him. But, you know, with concussions, it's tricky, and so we'll learn a lot more about both of them on Friday. And as far as replacing Ertz, they don't have a tight end in the roster who can replace him. And, you know, it's funny because I was just watching earlier today, going over how Philadelphia defended their passing game and just, you know, watching how Jane was against them. And Zach Ertz, like, there's still some things, some routes where it's subtle movement to create an opening, right? And he has that. He presents a good target for Jaden Daniels. Now, could some of these other guys get there? Like, I don't think they have a tight end like him on there as a pass catcher. And could Ben Sinnott get there? Maybe. But that's, as you know, I think you and I were talking about that. Like, it's not necessarily his style, right? I think you can do more. But I think the way you try to replace the production is not so much to try and replicate what he does, but then maybe go in a slightly different direction, right? And what do these guys do well? Sinnott and John Bates, you know, Bates is a good blocker, and I think Sinnott is getting there, right? So, like, you can use two tight end sets to do that with the occasional pass, but maybe different. But you also have, like, do you use Keanu Brown, Zacchaeus, maybe K.J. Osborne a little bit more, or two running back sets? So I think it's just more about diversity, you know, finding more what you can do not to replicate Zach Ertz, but to maybe, like, what else can you do with the talent you have? And so I think it's more about that rather than saying, okay, can you ask Ben Sinnott to do what he does? Well, he's not Zach Ertz, you know? And I think that savviness that he has as a route runner shows up. There's a couple routes that he ran the other against the Eagles. The first time, I'm like, it's just a little bit, it's more, you know, and it's the right, like, it's a good route by a veteran tight end, just kind of get him to widen and cut back inside. He caught a touchdown pass that way. He caught a couple passes that way, but one was a touchdown, right? And he'd get the defensive back to kind of bite on something, you know? And so now the other thing you can do with it, Craig, is there are a couple passes he had in that game which played off Terry McLaurin. So can you put a Ben Sinnott or a John Bates in position to run some of those routes? Yeah, you can, because that was dependent. Like, there were sometimes they'd widen their drops to get to focus on McLaurin, creating an opening in the slot, much like we saw, like, you know, some of those little hitch routes, right? Jamison Crowder had one the other day. They love those hitches. And that's something you can do by playing off of others. So there's ways to to, you know, get production still. And then the other thing is you have a really good quarterback who can make plays. That helps.
Yeah, that guy's pretty solid. You highlighted quite a bit of that on your podcast today. I love the title. Number five's pretty good. That's the title of the latest episode of the John Keim Report, which you can check out anywhere you get your pods. Of course, read John's work on ESPN.com. Keim with us here on The Hoffman Show. To your point, like, I think Crowder becomes really important. You need a guy that can win quickly. Like, you can use him. You know, some of the blocking stuff where it's like, we don't need our best blocker, but we need a guy to get the job done, where Ertz might have done that. KJ Osborne actually is pretty good at that stuff. But I think the big question folks have for someone like you, Cakes, is, okay, what Ben Sinnott was a second-round pick. Like, why can't he do this stuff? What's the feeling in the building around Sinnott? What can he do at this point? And where do they hope to see him grow to so that if he is, you know, like number one tight end next year or is playing with somebody next year as a 1A, 1B, that his role, it can be much more expanded as a guy that's now, what, 15 games into his NFL career?
Well, when they got him, too, remember, like, a lot of it was his versatility and just being able to run routes from different spots out of the backfield and then in line and all that. It's just that, you know, from the time we started watching him in training camp, it's not like there's been you can see the learning curves, right? And because he's not – this is not to – I don't know that he has a skill set to just be a dynamic player right away, if that makes sense, right? Like, he can help them, and he is, because he's playing. And so he does help them. But as a pass catcher, I think he's going to probably have to learn a little bit more about maybe, like, again – how do you create openings for yourself on these kind of routes? And he's not going to win sudden like a Jordan Reed once did, right? You know, that's just not his game. So how do you start to create that? And I think for him, it's going to be an accumulation of experience to help with that. And then get put in position. So maybe this week, because you don't have Ertz, he gets put in position more to do some of that stuff. And then we get to see that. And I think, like, in college, he was really good at run after the catch, but you get him into an open space situation and he can be a little bit more powerful. And I think, you know, so, but again, like with, I watch a guy like Ertz, and where they always talk about how friendly he is for a quarterback because of how he presents himself, right? Knowing when to sit in his spot and all that. Those are things that Sinnott can learn. And so I'll be curious to see how he does do and what they do to help, because Ertz has been a really good security blanket for Daniels. And I just think that's, you know, it doesn't mean they can't get production out of tight ends. I mean, they got some out of Bates in that game. And, you know, and in other games, like, you can certainly ask more from Sinnott in the past game. But I just don't know, is he that, you know, he's not that dynamic guy who's going to make that instant impact as a pass catcher. It doesn't mean he's not going to develop into that. But right now, I think he still has to learn.
We don't need to do a whole Tyree Jackson bit, but, like, is that just another body, or is he someone that could actually be called up? The former college quarterback, for the listeners who may not know, former college quarterbacks played 3 years in the league, hasn't been on a team this year. He's like 26 years old, but they signed him to the practice squad yesterday. Is he someone even worth, like, noting?
Yeah, well, I think it'll be interesting, because if you want to have three tight ends, like, then you may need to do that. And, you know, Colson Yankoff's on IR, so, like, there's, you know, you may have to do that. So we'll see, and I think it certainly speaks to perhaps with Ertz what might be the case on Sunday. And so, yeah, I'm not sure yet, though.
All right, TBD. On the defensive side of the ball, Jeremy Chinn, as you said, maybe a little bit ahead of Zach in that he was at least out and around today. But I thought it was really interesting in the game, and John, we texted a little bit about this, but we can bring this conversation to the air, that Derek Forrest was in there instead of Percy Butler as first the third safety for a fair amount of sets. And then once Chinn went out, like, he was the full-on replacement, which was definitely interesting in terms of then some of the coverage situations those guys were in and whatever. Has that been something that you've been able to chase down any more information
yet,
talking to some folks? And I guess then I'll ask you, if you haven't had any more information from talking to folks yet, like, what did you make of kind of how they're deploying their safeties and what changes if Chinn is out on Sunday?
Well, and that's a good question, too. And one thing I will say this, and credit to Derek Forrest, because And this is something I was talking to him about today is, you know, you go from sitting all year, like we know the guy has a lot of passion for football. It is really hard to sit there and watch all the time, right? And when you want to be playing, so I give him a lot of credit because he seemed to go in and do a pretty good job. And, you know, he was ready for his opportunity. And, like, you know, he told me he shed a tear after that one because of what it meant for him to be back on the field. Like, it's not just about money for these guys. Like, they want to play. So I give him a lot of credit for staying ready and being ready for his opportunity. So and moving forward, like, that is a loss for Jeremy Chinn. And part of it too, Craig, and I don't know, again, we don't know his status, but where you saw him the other day helping, for example, was with Marshawn Lattimore. There were a couple times where I saw it rewatching the game where he's like, he is motioning to Lattimore about, like, okay, they motioned to this, you know, hey, come over here, get this guy, whatever. There were a couple times where he did that, and Lattimore played it very well because of that, right? I mean, part because he's really good, but partly because of Chinn getting him in the right spot, or at least telling him, you know, this is, boom, you know, this is what we're doing here, whatever. And so you lose that with him out. Now, Quan Martin is an outstanding communicator as well, but you like to have, not that Derek Forrest isn't, it's just that Chinn has been really good in that area, and he's been playing, so he knows, right? So I think, like, you would miss that for sure.
This Eagles matchup this weekend, I think there's one huge factor on each side of the ball that if I'm a Washington optimist, I look at and go, that could change it in our favor, and that could change it in our favor. On the offensive side, it's we have a full week of preparation. If I was preparing for a Vic Fangio defense as a rookie quarterback, having to do it on a short week is an absolute nightmare. And that's what happened last time for Jaden Daniels. Now they have a full week. That is obviously very helpful. Marshawn Lattimore being able to cover A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith and then devoting extra resources to the other and having an absolute legit number one shutdown corner, that is also an enormous factor against a Philadelphia Eagles team that might have the most talented offensive roster in the NFL. How much do you buy stock in either or both of those things this weekend?
Oh, for sure. Like, first of all, like, Lattimore, I mean, the Saints barely looked at him, Craig. Like, there was one pass where I'm like, okay, you have your guy here. But they looked over there, it's Lattimore's side, and they just went the other way. Because, you know, I don't think the Eagles are going to do that. I think they would challenge him more. But I think that is a really good – this is a really good game for a guy – to have a guy like Lattimore. And, you know, just a little aside, like, I don't know how much you were able to watch him, but I was really impressed with how patient he played. And there were a couple times where, like, just watching him, how he anticipated routes based on situations, based on game situation, et cetera, like, was impressive. And the way he – there are a couple of times where just mirroring, he's in press coverage and mirroring the feet of the receiver. Because of that, you're not getting turned around. Do you know what I mean? So, like, it was just impressive to watch. So you add a guy like that, it's always going to help.
For sure. I'll let you get on the Jaden thing in a second, but just on that point on Lattimore before we lose it, there's a third down late in the game that Sainer still gives up.
Third and one.
Yeah. And it's like, it's third and one. There's like 40 seconds to go. Just don't give up the touchdown.
That's the play I'm talking about.
But, like, you watch Lattimore on the other side, and Lattimore's not giving up the first down nor the touchdown.
So I'm going to geek out on this one because I pointed this out, like, after the, you know, when I do my game review on Tuesday for Tuesday morning, like, I put up a clip of that play for the exact reason you said, and it was a great concept to watch because it's basically a mirror concept. The receivers are running the same route on each side. So you get a chance to see how both corners play it. And that's what I was talking about, like the play where he played the route, whereas, you know, Samuelson was playing the play, right? And I even talked to Mike about that. I'm like, and he noticed how Lattimore played. It's like, it's not a knock on Samuelson. It's a credit to the experience of Lattimore and how he played it and why. And what you saw on that play is basically, you know, they were both about the same yardage off the ball. And at the snap, Lattimore kind of takes a step back, but then he starts to shuffle to the outside because he's anticipating the out route. Why? Because of the time remaining and the situation. So you're going to get a quick out because you don't want to use the clock. And, you know, and so that's what he anticipated. he breaks about – so when he's ready to break on his guy, he's actually 2 yards closer to his guy than what Samardzija is. Because, and Samardzija was more backpedaling. Again, not knocking him. It's just the difference, and it shows – and that, you know, then he broke on the ball. Now, he wasn't able to get there. It was like a 7-yard gain. But that's something where he can learn from that. The other thing is, I will say, like, I think that may have been the only catch against Samardzija all day. So, like, those corners did a really good job. And I want to make sure I point that out about him. But I did, I found it, again, you did too. You geek out on stuff like that because it really highlights that guy is smart and he's just a different corner.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's so validating because I feel like so often we're just like, why can't you play up more on that? Like, why do you have to play? And, like, sometimes, you know, corners have to be on different levels and, you know, you don't want guys running into each other. And there's all kind of reasons why defenses and defensive backs play press versus off coverage in combination with their teammates on any given play. But it often just feels like I'm taking crazy pills watching guys play 10 yards off on 3rd and 5 and give up a quick hitch or a quick out. And you're just like... But that's what they need right there. And so to see a guy like Lattimore just do it, I'm like, aha, it can be done.
And he also was like, they both were about 6 or 7 yards off their guy. It's just that he was more, again, took a kind of a little of a step back, but he was more balanced and positioned, ready to pounce on the ball. So when his receiver's breaking, he's already breaking on him. So if the ball is thrown to him, he probably breaks it up. And whereas, like I said, you know, Samardzija was a few yards back and not, you know, he had to kind of, when he lurched back a little bit to plant and go forward, it's just the difference. And again, it's not to pick on him. It's to say, like, that's a good lesson for someone else to say, like, oh, that makes sense. Now I get, you know what I mean? I understand why he did this. Now I can incorporate that for my own game.
For sure. And it's a great thing for Mikey to have as an example in the room. All right, on the Jaden front, getting a second crack at this Eagles defense, how do you feel about that? And also, I'll add in one other element to this, John, because we're getting shorter on time here, and this may actually be the more important thing. The O-line had its worst outing of the season, arguably, against the Saints, certainly as a run-blocking unit. How confident are you that they can flip that around with Tyler Biadasz back in the fold and a full week of practice together where the center that practices all week actually plays on Sunday?
Yeah, and and that makes a difference. And that's not to say that Geeter was to blame for everything. It certainly wasn't, because there are a lot of missed blocks on that front, and I thought the Saints were just the more physical team that day.
Yeah.
And I think that made a big difference. And it sounds basic, but it's really true. And you know, but like against the Eagles front, like Jalen Carter is a problem for any offensive lineman. So you've got to be better there. But I think having a healthy I think in that game, because it's a short week, again, you're, like you said, you're facing a coordinator. They probably did more post-snap rotation on him than most other teams that I've seen. Now, I could be wrong in that, but they seem to do it a lot. And, you know, you're showing this, you're showing that, and then you're getting to this. And so I think they had a really good plan for him. They also had a really good plan against Terry McLaurin. Since that game, McLaurin has been moved around, certainly not a ton more, but enough more, but also not just moving around, but getting targets on the other side. That's key, because early in the year, he was lining up on the other side at times, rarely getting a target. So that's been a change, too. So Daniels, I think there are a couple keys. One, it looks like whatever was not so much bottom. Listen, you played some really good defenses. Philly's a really good defense. Pittsburgh's a really good defense. And then you're dealing with, you know, a body that's probably, you know, feeling the rigors of an NFL season. You had the rib injury. You're missing practice time. There were throws that he was making. It's like your rhythm isn't there. You're off target here and there. So there were throws that he normally makes that were just a little bit off. And for whatever reason, right? So I think, you know, I think we've seen a different Jaden Daniels the last couple of weeks. That should help. You know, I think I think that's going to be a big deal. The ability to threaten in multiple ways with him. But to me, if you don't get that run game at least going to a decent degree, it's going to be really tough. So that goes back to the line. And Biadasz is a, you know, I had someone who had been here tell me, like, that was a huge signing to get that guy, and like how well he's actually playing. And you talk to guys around him, like, he's very smart, but he also, like, as one lineman told me, he battles his ass off to get in front of guys, like, and that's what you need. So I think having him, and just how much he helps with protections, identifying fronts. You don't see them get fooled a lot when he's in there. And I think there's a reason for that. So that's going to help because you need to get that going in order to really kind of – you don't want to have Daniels have to drop back 40 times a game or 40 times in that game to beat them. But I think he's in a good position to be more effective than he was the first time around, even with Noah Brown out.
Yeah,
and Eckler and
Earth. Right. But he does have Brian Robinson back.
Let me stop there.
Yeah, didn't have B-Rob in that first game.
Correct. And, like, you know, he's also just seeming more himself. Like, maybe almost whether it – because, you know, again, I think it's too simplistic to say it was just the ribs or this or that. I think, your body's going to feel the rigors of an NFL season. You had just played a physical game against Pittsburgh, and then you are sore. Then you did have to deal with that. Then you miss practice time. Then it's like there's a grind of an NFL year for him that just adds up. I kind of think he almost feels refreshed at this point, and I'll be curious to see how that plays out in the game. But this will be a fascinating matchup because it's the first time we see him a second time against a really good defense. You know, he faced the Giants twice, but, like, they're not the same caliber of the Eagles. But I think there's some things that I'll be curious what Cliff Kingsbury does to also adjust to what we saw in that first game.
John Keim, everybody. ESPN.com is where you can read his work. You can listen to the podcast, The John Keim Report, wherever you get your pods. It's also on the Empire Media YouTube page. You might just see a familiar face there sometime, you know, next weekish or so.
There you go.
Cakes, always appreciate you, sir. Thanks so much. Craig. Have a great holiday, and I'll see you Sunday.
Thank you. You too. See
All
you.
Right. That's John Keim, everybody, with us here on The Hoffman Show. When we get back, we're actually wrapping up the show. That's it. That's all. Real Things is next. We've got Virginia Tech Hoops coming a little bit later, 6:15. Pregame begins here on the Team 980. It's The Hoffman Show. Wrap it up here on the Team 980. Always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are wrapping early because we got Georgetown, Virginia Tech. Hoops, Georgetown hoops, I believe, tonight here on the Team 980. I think I said Tech earlier, but I think we got the Hoyas tonight, had the Terps last night, got the Wizards later in the week. We're your home for hoops here on the Team 980. We're also your home for wrapping up radio shows with a segment we call Real Things, Real People Said in Real Microphones. We got some funny ones today. We also have some actual substantive audio, so let's get it all going right now.
Real Things.
We're not going to live so this year.
Real people.
5-11. Not very good.
Said into real microphones.
You know, the culture is actually damn good.
Mayor Muriel Bowser didn't say any of this into a microphone. She said it into a telephone when asked by the gentleman that hosts our morning show into microphones. Mayor Bowser was on the Sports Junkies this morning. On the heels of the news that the RFK site is getting closer to being unlocked, we had a great interview with Aaron Cox of the Washington Post earlier in the show that is definitely worth checking out on why there are still hurdles to go. They are congressional hurdles, but if the big spending bill gets passed in its current form, the RFK bill is there, which Mayor Bowser hopes can turn the RFK site into the next Navy Yard, build a stadium, and watch a whole area transform.
Do you envision it being like, because others have suggested, like another Navy Yard in that area? Do you have the acreage and the ability to do that?
It's larger than that. And so think about some of the large federal parcels like the Wharf, mm-hmm. Navy Yard, Walter Reed, St. Elizabeth's. It's larger than that. So the answer is yes. If you're thinking about, are we going to have entertainment, restaurants? We will have more sports uses. We already have ball fields there. We will have a DC Parks and Rec indoor sportsplex there. And we will have a park that connects to the Anacostia River. So like the Wharf enliven the Potomac River and really underutilized waterfront, that's what we know that a development at RFK can do in the Anacostia River.
Mayor Bowser this morning on the Sports Junkies. For the full interview, go ahead and check out their podcast feed. It's also on YouTube. at 106.7 The Fan. Our interview with Aaron Cox from The Post will be up in our podcast feed and, of course, on our YouTube page at Craig Hoffman and at the Team 980, either a little later tonight or tomorrow morning. Dan Quinn also speaking today on a story that John Keim broke last week and that we saw come to life today. John Allen's getting ready to return to practice. And in fact, he did return to practice today.
Well, first, I think it's like a remarkable part of the rehab, John, for him to go through it. There's a lengthy protocol in the return to make sure, you know, we don't miss a step along the way. For us, you've heard us say, protecting the team, that's the player too. So we did that with Marshawn, and he's really worked hard, you know, to get ready into this space. So we'll just kind of take it practice as we're going, but he'll be back, you know, in with the team today and going through it.
So there you go. John Allen back in practice, kind of telling us most likely next week, but we will see. It's also Jaden Daniels' birthday today, which was celebrated by Mike Saint, who's still at the podium.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, QB1. Happy birthday, Miss Ricky in America. Happy birthday, Jaden Daniels. Thanks, bro. Thanks. Happy birthday, bro.
Appreciate you, bro.
Best QB in America, man.
Thanks, man.
You're the guy.
One, Anthony, that's adorable. Two, perhaps the most adorable part is Jaden, you know how when you're out for your birthday, well, you don't seem like the type of shy guy that would do this, but I'm sure you have friends. That, like, you're out for your birthday, the waiter starts singing, you know it's you, and you're just like, oh, no. Jaden Daniels has that look on his face immediately at his press conference. Pulls his hood up over his head. No, don't embarrass me. Pretty funny.
Yeah.
So that was thing two. Also, who's Miss Ricky? Do we know? Is that his mom's not Miss Ricky, is it?
I think the second funniest part, though, was the fact that Charlie was dressed up in a pink.
There's also that. Charlie Mule from Commander's PR was dressed up in a silly costume because of a bet in the background. Just a fun day at Commander's Park. They'll have another one tomorrow. We'll tell you all about it. Hoffman's show. See you tomorrow at 4:00.